Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers won their weekend series with the Tigers. I'm going to talk about two Dodger pitchers who I am always happy to talk about, and one now former Dodger pitcher who I wish I didn't have to talk about, but he's in the news this weekend. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening so you will never miss a day, because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder. My co-host is Vince Samperio, but it's just me today and probably for this whole week. Vince is on vacation, and so I will probably be holding the fort down myself this week. But Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans just like you. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room, so we're not quite insiders, which is probably a good thing. But we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. And with all that said, let's talk about the Dodgers. The big moment of the week, at least for me, or the weekend, was Clayton Kershaw on Saturday night. Actually, the only game of the series the Dodgers lost, unfortunately, but that wasn't really the story of that game. Clayton Kershaw came into the game three strikeouts behind Don Sutton for the most in Dodgers history. And in the fourth inning, I believe, Kershaw passed Sutton and became number one on the Dodgers' all-time list of strikeouts, striking out Spencer Torkelson on a slider at his back foot. Beautiful pitch and a great, you know, it's fitting that he did it with any of Kershaw's pitches could be fitting, especially the curveball or the slider, because they're both so iconic. But the slider is what turned him into the best pitcher in baseball over a decade ago. And so it was fitting that that was the pitch that he got the record-breaking strikeout on. That moment, I made sure to be there for. I had a lot going on that night. My daughter had a bake sale that day. She's been raising money to buy supplies to send with an organization over to refugees fleeing from Ukraine, which is great. You know, I don't brag about my daughter on here a lot. I should probably more. I know that's not why you guys tune in, but my daughter's 17 years old, and she was feeling frustrated and hopeless at the state of the world, and that there was nothing she could do. And then she realized, oh, there are some things I can do. So she organized this bake sale. I put the word out on Twitter. I don't think I mentioned it on here at all, but I put the word out on Twitter, and a lot of you who I know listen to this show or watch it came through with some donations, knowing you couldn't be at the bake sale itself. And then the bake sale itself was a huge success. Overall, she raised $2,200 at this bake sale with your donations and the bake sale itself, plus her employer cut a check for $1,500 to the organization that she's donating to. So total of $3,700 that my daughter was able to help with. I'm bragging about her for a minute, and it all comes back because it all happened on Saturday. That was the day we had the bake sale. That's what I was busy with. It's not too late. If any of you didn't know about it and want to contribute, my Venmo handle is the same as my Twitter handle, which is on the screen right now under my name. So feel free to shoot just under the description, just put bake sale, and I'll make sure that it gets added to her coffers over the next week or two. She'll be doing all the shopping and donating all the supplies. So anyway, but that was Saturday. And so we were doing that all day, but it ended at 8 o'clock. The bake sale ended at 8 o'clock, which happens to be what time Dodger games start here in Utah where I live. So went inside, and while we were taking everything down for the bake sale, I made sure to go inside and watch every inning that the Tigers were up to bat, which is weird. I usually want to watch the Dodgers bat, but this time when Kershaw's pitching a lot, I actually am more interested in watching when the Dodgers aren't batting. And so I watched all the Tigers at bats, and when he got that strikeout to break the record, the crowd, it was a sellout crowd, over 52,000 people, and the ovation was just exactly what you would hope it would be. And I saw, you know, I sell my tickets for a lot of games since I don't live close to the stadium. And as soon as Kershaw only had three strikeouts in his previous start, I started getting DMs from people. Hey, do you have tickets left for Saturday? The interest in this game just skyrocketed as soon as people realized this is going to be a historic day for Clayton Kershaw. And honestly, if it had been any other day other than the day my daughter was doing this bake sale, I would have been at Dodger Stadium. I told my daughter, this is proof that I love you more than I love Clayton Kershaw. And there are not many people in the world who can say that. But, you know, seeing the crowd and recognizing how much the fans at Dodger Stadium appreciated Clayton Kershaw and recognized what a moment this was. It was awesome. Kershaw himself said after the game, you know, he took a little walk, tipped his cap, and then planned on getting back on the mound and pitching some more. And the crowd wouldn't let him. And it was awesome. He had to tip his hat again. They put his family up on the big screen out in the outfield. So you could see Ellen with three of their four kids jumping around. Kershaw joked after the game. He's like, I don't even know where the fourth kid was. But you know, seeing their excitement, seeing his genuine, you know, not quite emotion. He didn't, you know, but recognizing, and I think if you're watching this on YouTube, I think the cover photo or the thumbnail image of this video, this episode is going to be Kershaw there tipping his hat. It's more than we see from Kershaw most of the time. And after the game, hearing him talk, you could tell he really, really appreciated it. I think this is one of those moments that is the reason why Kershaw came back to the Dodgers. You know, as much as Texas is his home, but Los Angeles is his baseball home. This is his whole baseball life has been the Dodgers. You know, he was playing for the Dodgers when he and Ellen got married. Yeah, he was in junior high in Texas when they met. But when they got married, he was playing for the Dodgers. All four of his kids have been born while he was a Dodgers pitcher. This is his baseball life. And so seeing the crowd reward him like that, seeing him appreciate them rewarding him. And you know, if you're a regular listener or viewer, you know, Clayton Kershaw is my favorite player of all time. He passed up everybody else a few years ago. I love Clayton Kershaw as a player, as a person, everything about him. I think he's amazing. And so for me, it was, I didn't cry or anything, but it was, I think I mostly just smiled. I think if you had taken a picture of me, I probably just had a big, stupid grin on my face because it just made me so happy on every level. And it's great. And I was so glad that it happened at Dodger Stadium, even though we were all disappointed that he didn't get it done against whoever it was in his last start, Padres, maybe, I don't remember. But you know, the fact that he got to do it at home was really, really cool. And it was fitting. And like, I don't think he necessarily deliberately didn't strike out many guys in his previous start, but it definitely worked out the way it was supposed to, because that was a moment that needed to happen at Dodger Stadium so that Clayton Kershaw could get that recognition that he deserved. So great moment for him, great moment for me, great moment for all of us who love Clayton Kershaw over the weekend. And like I said, even though that was the one game of the series they lost, overall, who cares? It's a game, you know. But Clayton Kershaw, this was kind of a career achievement, and it was awesome. I would have loved to have the sweep, but we got two wins and then that moment in the other game, so it was a good weekend. I'm going to come back in a minute. I'm going to talk about the Dodgers starting pitcher on Sunday, Walker Buehler, and how he had a much different game than his previous game, except in one important area. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. Hey, betonline.net is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. I'm back. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen. When you're done with this, maybe for your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast. There's recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's talk about Walker Buehler. Buehler pitched on Sunday, coming off his complete game shutout in his previous start against the Padres. I have no idea. Yeah, the D-backs. Against the D-backs. Kershaw's previous start was against the Padres. Buehler's was against the D-backs. I'm sorry. I forget opponents. Once it's done, it's like, I don't care. I have enough time caring about other teams when the Dodgers are actively playing them. Buehler came out. He only went five innings this time, threw, I think, 92 pitches, and 57 of them were strikes, which means 35 were balls. So not nearly as efficient as he had been. Didn't have the command that he did in his previous start. But the one big similarity between the two starts is he didn't allow any runs. He's now at a 14-inning scoreless streak. And he also didn't get hit hard. He allowed 6 hits in 5 innings, but there were only 4 hard-hit balls, which means 95 miles an hour or higher on exit velocity. And 3 of those 4 were outs. And there were only 2 batted balls that had an expected batting average over 440. And 2 of the 6 singles he allowed had an expected batting average of 130 or lower. So there was some dumb luck. There was some, sometimes it was just because he didn't have the command, he had to come into the strike zone more than he would have wanted, make better hitters pitches. But he still, his stuff is so good that they couldn't really put Goodwood on it. And now suddenly, after all the hand-wringing over his slow start, his season ERA currently sits at 212. His strikeout rate is climbing. We've talked a few times how his strikeouts per 9 was the lowest it's ever been. After his first 3 starts, it was at 6.3, which is way, way low for him. But he has 15 strikeouts in those last 14 innings in the last 2 games. So his overall season strikeouts per 9 is now up to 7.9. And in the last 2 starts, it's 9.6, which is better than last year when he was a Cy Young candidate the whole season. So the command wasn't there on Sunday for sure. But to get through 5 innings with no runs allowed while really only commanding 1 pitch, it was pretty darn impressive. And of course, it helps when Javi Baez swings at a slider that I don't think I'm exaggerating here. I think it was 2 feet off the plate to strike out Baez with bases loaded and 2 outs. That definitely helped. But it also kind of tells you about the movement on Buehler's slider and the smart pitching. It's very, very smart to recognize this is Javi Baez. I don't need to throw a pitch in the strike zone to get him out. And so he started this slider. It started off the plate. It was a pitch that even if it had been a fastball, maybe Baez can get his bat to it. But realistically, I mean, it was not a good pitch to swing at, even if it had been a fastball. And by the time it got done moving, I think Baez's bat missed the ball by at least a foot and a half. It was crazy. It was awesome. I don't like Javi Baez. I recognize why people like him. For me, he's always been a little more flash than substance. And so I always enjoy watching him get out, especially after he had a couple big hits against the Dodgers in the game that they lost when Kershaw pitched. But Walker Buehler now is, he's doing really well. He got the win on Sunday, so he's up to 3-1 now. His ERA is at 212, like I said. And, it seems like Walker Buehler is basically back. There are some things you could look at and say, well, he really only commanded the cutter. That was the only pitch he had good command of. The other pitches were moving really well. He threw some good curveballs. He only threw the changeup a couple times. That was the part that was interesting to me, especially there were some lefties up, Tucker Barnhart and Robbie Grossman both were in situations where you might have expected that changeup. And I don't know if Buehler just, when warming up, didn't have a feel for that changeup or whatever it was, but he didn't throw it very much and didn't land it. I don't think he landed at all for a strike. It was, I'm going to look really quick, do some live research and see where we were at on the number of changeups that Buehler threw, pitch type. This is really cool. If you guys don't know, Baseball Savant, it's at baseballsavant.mlb.com, and you get game feeds for any game while they're happening, and you can see. So right now I have all 92 of Buehler's pitches, and I'm sorting them by pitch type. So we've got he only threw 8 sliders, but 4 of them were for strikes, 2 swinging strikes, 2 foul balls, and then 4 balls. 3 sinkers. Ooh, threw more curveballs than I realized. Looks like about 12 curveballs, but he didn't land it very much. Ball, hit, strike, ball, strike, ball, and then 2 foul balls. So it was hit and miss with that. It was moving well, but he wasn't quite commanding it. The cutter, let's see, 23 to 49. So he threw 26 cutters, and that was where he really commanded it. Got a lot of swinging strikes, got a lot of some foul balls, and not many balls. Like, he threw that thing for strikes. And then the changeup, he threw it 6 times. 3 of them got fouled off two by Austin Meadows, one by Harold Castro, and then an out to Akil Baddoo. So he only threw it to the lefties, and not as much as we saw in that game against the D-backs when he threw the complete game. The changeup was huge for him in that game. And I mean, one of the big factors there was that he was commanding everything that game. But the changeup, after he added that in last year, that kind of added another element to his game as a pitcher. And I feel like, I wouldn't say in order for him to be successful, he has to have the changeup, but I think he's a different pitcher when the changeup is working. It takes him to that next level where, you know, he's always been a good pitcher, but last year he was a Cy Young candidate. And a lot of that was because of the changeup, adding another thing. And then his four-seam fastball, he threw obviously the most of, like he always does, 37 four-seam fastballs. But a lot of them didn't find the strike zone. And he only got 1, 2, 3 swinging strikes on that. And only 4 looks like called strikes. Everything else, some foul balls and a lot of pitches out of the strike zone and a few balls in play. And, you know, a guy like Walker Buehler, he's got all these other pitches, but if he's not commanding the fastball, it's really hard to be successful. And so that's why it was so impressive that, yeah, he went 5 shutout innings. Not as efficient as he would have liked. He takes a lot of pride in going 6 innings or more in each game. So I'm sure he wasn't thrilled with the performance. But to get through that, and it helped that the Dodgers scored early in the game, so he had a decent lead by the time he left. It was a really good performance by Walker Buehler in a totally different way than his previous amazing performance, except for the one similarity, which is that the opposing team did not score. So overall, good series. Dodgers win 2 out of 3. As we've talked about, you know, they're losing a game is never fun, but if you're going to win 2 out of 3 in a 3-game series, I think my favorite way is win, loss, win, because you start off well and you end well. Obviously the best is to win all 3, but that can't always happen. And winning the series, you know, the Dodgers now, basically they're still on pace for 108 wins because they have twice as many wins as they have losses. And that's what you get. When you keep winning 3-game series, you're going to end up with twice as many wins as losses. Occasionally mix in a sweep once in a while, because sometimes you lose a series to the D-backs or the Rockies for some reason. But yeah, Dodgers are looking good. And unfortunately, that's all the baseball for the weekend that I'd talk about, because when I come back, I'm going to talk about Trevor Bauer. MLB issued their suspension for Trevor Bauer, 2 full seasons. A lot to talk about there. I'm going to do my best with it. I have a lot to say and a lot of really good information. If you are interested in this, you have questions about it, I have a lot of good information. I've talked to several attorneys. I've done a lot of my own research. So there's a lot of good information. I also understand if you stop the episode, go ahead and listen to the next ad break, because, you know, our advertisers are important, but I understand if you want to skip through the Bauer talk. But if there is, you know, I think there's some interesting information here. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. Let's talk about Built Bar for a minute. Summer is coming, and sometimes you just need an easy, portable, delicious snack. Well, guess what? They also make one of those things that's really good for you. It's called a Built Bar. They're delicious, and they are very good for you. They are all low carb, low sugar, low calorie, high protein, high fiber, all the good stuff, none of the bad stuff, all covered in chocolate. They also have Built Puffs, which are like chocolate covered marshmallows that are also somehow healthy for you. If you're trying to get more protein in your life, just trying to have a snack that isn't terrible for you, Built Bar is the way to do it. I talk about Built Bar a lot, partly because they pay me to, but partly because I genuinely love the Built Bars. My pantry is full of them. I love them. My whole family loves them. We are a Built Bar family. And so if you're not a Built Bar family yet, you should be. You can order a mix box. You'll get a bunch of different flavors. You can find out what you like, or maybe you know what you like and you just want to order some more. Whatever you're doing, go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Okay, I am back, and it is not my pleasure, but it is my duty to talk about Trevor Bauer. I'm going to start with what they call a trigger warning. we're going to be discussing sensitive topics. I'm not going to be gratuitous. My mom and my son listen to this show. You know, I'm not going to go into any more detail than I have to, but there are some things that will be discussed that might not be appropriate for younger listeners, and it definitely could be triggering for any listeners who have been victims of sexual assault or domestic violence. So I'm going to do my best to treat it properly. I hope you'll be patient with me. I hope I don't mess it up. But the other thing I want to make clear before I get started is I won't be stating any opinions here. I am working with facts here. I'm not defending Bauer. I'm not condemning him. Almost everybody has an opinion one way or the other about Bauer's guilt or innocence. I don't. My main mantra in life is don't have a strong opinion about something if you don't have much information about it. That's what I believe. And that is definitely the case here. I don't know what happened between Trevor Bauer and his accuser. I know what's been reported. I know some of the things that have been said on both sides. I don't know what happened. And so I don't have a strong opinion. So everything I state here, I will be stating facts. So if I say, if MLB determined that Bauer did X, Y, or Z, I'm not saying Bauer did those things. I will be laying out what MLB can or should do if they determined he did those things. So hope that distinction is clear. And with all that said, there's a lot to jump into. MLB announced on Friday, Trevor Bauer has been suspended for two full seasons, effective immediately, which means he will be eligible to return after 18 games in the 2024 season. If he has a team, his contract with the Dodgers will be expired by then. He was only under contract through 2023. I guess from a financial standpoint, the Dodgers save about $60 million a year. That's not the important thing at all, but they save most of his $45 million salary this year. I think about $42 million of it, and then the $17 million he was owed for next year. If he had exercised his option. So $59-60 million, something like that they save. They also save about $31-32 million on their luxury tax number for this year and $34 million next year. His luxury tax is based on average annual value of the contract, which is $34 million a year. And so they save that full number next year on next year's luxury tax. They save all of that minus, 3 weeks worth basically from this year. That's the financial side of things. Not important. Even the baseball side of things. It's like the Dodgers have been without Bauer for so long. None of us as fans have been planning on Bauer coming back necessarily. The front office obviously wasn't expecting him. If he had come back, they would have made it work and figured it out. But they weren't expecting it. They didn't plan their offseason with the idea of Trevor Bauer being in their starting rotation. So there's not much baseball impact. But I'm seeing a lot of stuff on social media, some misconceptions and some other things that I want to clear up. A lot of people are saying something along the lines of Trevor Bauer was found not guilty, so how could MLB suspend him? It's important to note, Trevor Bauer was not found not guilty. The district attorney declined to prosecute. And that's different. And the one hearing they did have in court was his accuser was her application for a restraining order was rejected because the judge found that Bauer was not an ongoing, a future threat to her. There was nothing that happened in court that said Trevor Bauer did not do what he was accused of doing. The trial that would have determined that never happened because the district attorney declined to file charges. Now, I also saw people say, well, if the district attorney didn't even have enough evidence to prosecute, how can MLB have enough evidence to suspend him? And like that mindset, I think is a little bit backwards. There's a different burden of proof, and it's very important. In MLB's policy, which is officially called the Joint Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, and Child Abuse Policy, it says that the burden of proof is on MLB in order to suspend someone. But in a criminal trial, the standard for proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. A defendant has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt in order to be found guilty. But the standard in a policy like MLB's is generally what they call a preponderance of evidence, which basically just means more likely than not. So, hypothetically, if the district attorney and MLB both, after their investigations, ended up 80% sure that Trevor Bauer was guilty of sexual assault, and again, I'm not saying they were 80% sure, I'm throwing 80% out as a hypothetical number, then the DA would be correct not to file criminal charges, and MLB would be correct to suspend him, because 80% sure is not enough to get a criminal conviction. You have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. But 80% more than satisfies the preponderance of evidence standard, which is what it is in MLB's case. So my best guess is that somewhere that the, you know, and I doubt that the DA and MLB have the same exact number, but the district attorney's sureness that Bauer was guilty was less than 100%, somewhere less than 100%, and MLB's was more than 50%. Well, there's a lot of middle ground there, and so it is entirely possible, and in my opinion, likely, that MLB met their preponderance of evidence standard, and the district attorney knew they couldn't meet their beyond a reasonable doubt standard. So, moving on to the next thing. There is uncontroverted testimony, and that's a legal term that I'll explain in a minute. There is uncontroverted testimony from Bauer's accuser that he did things to her while she was unconscious. She didn't specify sexual things, but within the context, it's clear that that's what she meant. They were having sex, and they were both naked, and that's, you know, it's clear that that's what she meant. Bauer's attorneys did not dispute that claim, and neither did Bauer himself, because when he took the stand in that hearing, all he did was state his name and occupation and then exercise his Fifth Amendment rights. So, again, MLB's joint domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy, we usually just call it the domestic violence policy, but since this is actually a case of sexual assault, not domestic violence, it seems weird to call it the domestic violence policy. But here's how that policy defines sexual assault. It says, sexual assault refers to a range of behaviors, including a completed non-consensual sex act, an attempted non-consensual sex act, and or non-consensual sexual contact. Lack of consent is inferred when a person uses force, harassment, threat of force, threat of adverse personnel or disciplinary action, or other coercion, or when the victim is asleep, incapacitated, unconscious, or legally incapable of consent. That last part is key. According to MLB's policy, if Trevor Bauer performed a sex act or an attempted sex act or sexual contact while his accuser was unconscious or asleep, he is guilty of sexual assault. That's the standard in MLB's policy. It's also the standard in the state of California's penal code, for that matter. Now, uncontroverted testimony. I mentioned that's a legal term. That doesn't mean necessarily that it's true, but what it means is that Bauer's team had the chance to dispute it and didn't. They had the chance to controvert it and they didn't. So it is in the record as she said this happened and they didn't say, nuh-uh. And that, going back to the burden of proof, you know, it's entirely possible that uncontroverted testimony isn't enough to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty, but it is enough to satisfy the preponderance of evidence standard. That's entirely possible. My best guess is that that is why Bauer has been suspended at all and why it's such a lengthy suspension. One other thing that I kept seeing is people comparing it to the Marcell Ozuna case. Ozuna got arrested. There's video of him assaulting his wife last year. He was on administrative leave, and in the end, he was basically given time served. It essentially ended up being a 30-game suspension or something like that, and he's back playing with the Braves. And people saying, how can Bauer be suspended for 2 years when Ozuna is already playing? And here's the thing. There is no similarity. This policy I mentioned, it's called the Joint Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, and Child Abuse Policy. Those are three different things. The reason they're in one policy is because the procedures for investigating them and suspending and appealing and all that are the same. But the three actual crimes isn't quite the word, but things you can be guilty of under that policy are defined separately. You know, if Trevor Bauer was accused of beating up a child, nobody would be comparing it to the Marcelo Ozuna case. That people recognize that child abuse is different, but for some reason, people keep conflating domestic violence and sexual assault. Every legal system in the history of the world, I think, has different punishments for sexual assault than for, you know, domestic violence or other kind of assault. Sexual assault is a different crime and it is treated differently, and that's okay. In fact, that's probably good. So Rob Manfred, you guys know how I feel about Rob Manfred. I think he's a terrible commissioner. I think he is lacking most of the skills and attributes necessary to be a good commissioner. But the one skill he has, in fact, the only reason he has the job as commissioner, is that he is a very good attorney. I see people saying, well, he just hates Trevor Bauer. He's out to get Bauer. That's why it's so long. Rob Manfred is a very good attorney. Yeah, he doesn't like Trevor Bauer, but he's too smart an attorney to just give this arbitrary, capricious suspension, knowing that Trevor Bauer is going to appeal. Rob Manfred went into this whole ordeal knowing Trevor Bauer is going to appeal. So whatever punishment we hand down, we have to be able to defend it at appeal. That's what Rob Manfred's good at. The only thing he's good at is being a good attorney. So any idea that this was personal or that they're going to lose appeal, they're not going to, you know, well, if they lose the appeal, it will be on the merits. It won't be because, you know, I don't think that this is a case where the suspension is going to get reduced. I saw a lot of people say, well, it's probably just get cut down to 1 year. That's why Manfred went to 2 years, so that on appeal, they'll cut it down to 1 year. That's not how this works. And in this case, if Trevor Bauer is guilty of sexual assault and the arbitration panel determines that MLB was correct in determining that Bauer was guilty of sexual assault, a preponderance of evidence, then the suspension of 2 years will stand up because there is no precedent. Trevor Bauer is the first person accused of sexual assault under MLB's policy. So Marcelo Ozuna doesn't apply. Aroldis Chapman doesn't apply. None of those other guys apply. None of them were accused of sexual assault like Trevor Bauer is. If somebody gets accused of child abuse, that person will be the first, and there won't be a precedent for the length of suspension. So if the arbitration panel agrees with MLB that the preponderance of evidence says that Bauer is guilty, then he will be suspended for two full seasons. If they disagree, the suspension will be overturned. There won't be a meet in the middle thing unless MLB and Bauer's team came to an agreement, which I don't think is likely because they hate each other. So this is either going to be 2 years or it's going to be nothing. And based on what I can see, my best guess is that they're going to win the appeal because of that uncontroverted testimony. Trevor Bauer didn't quite admit to sexual assault according to MLB's policy, but he had the chance to say nuh-uh, and he didn't. And so I think they're probably going to win the appeal. So that's my thoughts on Trevor Bauer. Again, you know, I hope that I handled this okay. I hope that now that it's done, we won't talk about this again probably until the appeal is done and we know for sure where he's going. And even then, hopefully it'll just be a little news bite and then we can all move on with our lives. All right. Well, the first part of this episode was a lot of fun. I appreciate you guys being here for that. And if you stuck it out to the end, I really appreciate it. And thank you for that. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, where Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. If you are not listening to or watching Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love it if you add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, please tell them about the show and maybe they'll enjoy it. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. I think I got that right. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.